This way, if you please.
Asseyez-vous, s'il vous plaît. Thank you.
Now, Dr. Watson, may I assume your inquiry is about Lady Frances Carfax?
Yes, it is.
Once again, I have to say that you do not surprise me. When the lady left us so suddenly and unexpectedly, I must confess I thought it was very strange.
What was strange about it?
She had appeared to be so happy here. She occupied the best suite of rooms in the hotel with a superb view across the lake. Yet she left at one day's notice, and just after she had paid another week's rent in advance, too.
Was she by nature a changeable person, a difficult guest, perhaps?
Not at all. Lady Frances is a charming person, very much liked by everyone here. No longer young, you understand, but still handsome and elegant.
And no doubt fashionably dressed. She possessed some remarkable jewelry, I believe.
As to that, I cannot say. She did not entrust any valuables to the hotel safe. But I remember a maid telling me that Lady Frances kept the trunk in her bedroom locked at all times.
The maid? That would be Mademoiselle Marie Devine. What can you tell me about her?
She was as popular as her mistress. Quite delightful.
A local girl?
No. She came from Montpellier, I believe, in the Hérault.
Ah! That explains it. So, when her ladyship and Mr. Veen left here, they were travelling to Montpellier, were they?
Mais non, pas du tout. Why should you think so?
Only because Mr. Veen cashed a cheque signed by Lady Frances at a bank in Montpellier.
That is altogether extraordinary. When they left here, I am quite certain they did not travel to Montpellier. They left with great urgency and not a little secrecy also.
Secrecy? How was that?
You place me in a delicate situation, Dr. Watson. I was given strict instructions to tell this to nobody. But as it is the great Sherlock Holmes who wishes to find Lady Frances, I suppose I may trust you.
I sincerely hope so. Please tell me everything you know. It may be of the utmost importance.
Very well. Lady Frances made it known that she was going to stay at an hotel in Baden near Zurich, and her luggage was labelled accordingly. But, in fact, the luggage was to be redirected when it reached there, because they were actually travelling to a different Baden, not in Switzerland at all, the German spa in the Rhineland.
I don't understand. Why should she proceed in such a roundabout way?
I must tell you, monsieur, I think there was a man involved.
Good heavens. What man? Who was he?
His name I cannot tell you, but he called in here the day before Lady Frances left. I spoke to him myself, a huge, powerful man with a black beard, un sauvage, un véritable sauvage.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, excuse me. He looked like a wild man, a real savage. He would not give his name, but insisted he must see Lady Frances immediately. I telephoned her room, but when I described him, she refused absolutely to meet him. I had to tell him so, and he became violently enraged. For a moment, I feared he would cause trouble, but at last he walked out, swearing to return. Lady Frances changed her plans at once and left Lausanne for Baden the following morning.
I see. Tell me, do you happen to know the name of the hotel in Baden?
No, but of course, I made the reservation myself. It was the Englischer Hof.
Oh, was it?
There is something wrong?
No. I once stayed at another hotel of that name. No matter. I'm very much obliged to you, Monsieur Moser. One further question. Where do I go to send a telegram?
And therefore proceeding immediately to Englischer Hof Hotel, Baden. Obviously, Lady Frances fleeing sinister stranger. But why proceed via Baden, Switzerland, when en route for Baden, Rhineland? Signed, J.W.
Have had similar problem myself at Crewe Junction. Nil desperandum. Continue sterling work. Signed, S.H.
Lady Frances Carfax. Of course, Herr Doctor, I remember her very well. She stayed here for 2 weeks. I would describe her as a very lonely person.
Lonely? What gave you that impression?
like many lonely ladies, Lady Frances found consolation in religion. While staying here, she made the acquaintance of a Dr. Schlesinger and his wife. They were missionaries newly returned from South America, and they soon became very good friends.
I'm glad to hear it.
Dr. Schlesinger has a remarkable personality, and the fact that he was recovering from malaria, contracted in the course of his duties, affected Lady Frances deeply. She helped Mrs. Schlesinger to nurse the man of God, and he made a very good recovery. When he was strong enough to travel, Lady Frances accompanied the Schlesingers to London 3 weeks ago.
To London? Extraordinary.
What's extraordinary about it, Herr Doctor? That is her home, is it not?
Yes, but if she is in London, she has not returned to her own house or made herself known to her friends. But what about the maid, Marie Devine? Did she go to London with the rest of the party?
Oh, no. A few days earlier, she went away alone, crying many tears, and telling the girls on my staff that she would never go into service again.
She gave in her notice.
Is that all? She was dismissed. I can tell you no more than that.
Well, thank you, Herr Brandt. You have been very helpful.
There is one other matter you may like to know.
Mm-hmm.
You are not the only person who comes here to inquire after Lady Frances.
Indeed?
5 days ago, another man came here on the same errand.
Did he give his name?
No, he did not. He was an Englishman, so not the usual type of Englishman abroad. Not a quiet, reserved gentleman.
A savage, perhaps. A wild man.
You have hit it, Herr Doctor. That describes him perfectly. A bearded, sunburned fellow. Hard and fierce. I should not like to cross such a man.
Did the Schlesingers leave an address by any chance?
Alas, no. The only one who gave an address on her departure was Mademoiselle Devine, somewhere in Montpellier. Would that be of interest to you?
Mystery defines itself. Lady Frances, pursued by sinister figure bent on revenge. Has he already overtaken her? Perhaps Marie Devine holds answer to riddle. Signed, J.W.
Please send description, Dr. Schlesinger's left ear, soonest possible. Regards, signed, S.H.
Your idea humor somewhat obscure and singularly ill-timed. I'm therefore proceeding immediately to 11 Rue de Trajan, Montpellier. Signed, J.W.
Monsieur Desir.
Un café au lait, s'il vous plaît. No, better make that deux café. I'm expecting to meet a young lady.
Deux cafés, monsieur. Et bonne chance.
I beg your pardon?
La carte postale. Très jolie. Voulez-vous de carte postale?
What did he say?
He asks, do you wish to buy postcards?
Très jolie. Très amusante.
Certainly not. Go away. Allez-vous-en. Oh.
Forgive me. You are Dr. Watson?
Mademoiselle Devine. Bonjour.
I received your note. How may I help you?
Won't you sit down? I took the liberty of ordering coffee.
Oh, you're very kind.
As I said in my letter, it's in connection with Lady Frances Carfax.
Yes, but I do not know if there's much I can tell you.
You parted from Lady Frances on rather bad terms, I believe.
Oh, no, not at all. Lady Frances has always been kind to me. I only left her because she was returning to London and I had to come home. I am engaged to be married in a few weeks.
Oh, my apologies, mademoiselle, and my good wishes. Oh,
merci, monsieur.
I heard you were in tears when you left Lady Frances, and I assumed... Oh,
she gave me £50 as a wedding present. It broke my heart to say goodbye.
Ah.
My only comfort was that I left her in good company.
Dr. and Mrs. Schlesinger?
Oh, you know them. Oh, I was relieved because of that wicked man who followed her everywhere. I knew she would be safe in the care of her new friends.
Tell me about this man. Who was he?
I only saw him the once. In the foyer of the hotel at Lausanne. Oh, he was a terrible man. She would never speak of him, but I know she lived in a state of continual terror. Oh, mon Dieu.
What is it? What's the matter?
He pursues her still. There he is now. The man coming towards us.
Mademoiselle Devine.
Yes, but...
I inquired at your house. They said I would find you here.
Kindly stop annoying this young lady, sir.
Who the devil are you?
Never mind that. Where is Lady Frances Carfax?
What?
What have you done with her?
How dare you? Take your hand.
You?
Mind your head, Watson.
How are you feeling now?
What? No picture postcards. How many more times?
Forget the postcards, old chap. How are you feeling?
Good Lord. Holmes. But what... who are you...
I've kept an eye on you since you arrived in Montpellier. When our bearded friend got his hands around your windpipe, I thought it was time to intervene. So I struck him behind the ear with a water carafe, and he went down like a felled ox, taking you and the table with him.
But where is he now? And where's Mademoiselle Devine?
She took to her heels, and I can't say I blame her. As for your opponent, I fancy we shall run into him again presently. Meanwhile, I suggest we return to your hotel and tidy you up. I'm glad to see you looking a little more like your old self, bathed, changed, and in your right mind at last.
What do you mean by that?
Well, my dear fellow, you must admit you made a pretty good hash of things so far, eh?
Certainly not. What are you doing here, anyway? I thought you were fully occupied with the Abrahams case.
Well, the moment that was cleared up, I left London by the night train. Not a moment too soon, by the look of it.
You needn't have troubled. I could have handled matters perfectly well without you.
You've been remarkably consistent, I grant you that.
Thank you.
In fact, I can't offhand recall any possible blunder which you've managed to avoid.
Now, look
here. The total result of your efforts has been to raise the alarm everywhere and discover nothing.
Perhaps you think you might have done better.
Oh, there's no perhaps about it. I have done better. Ah, this will be the Honourable Philip Green. I trust that with his help we may find a fresh starting point to this whole sorry business. Come in.
Mr. Holmes, I received your message and I have come to... Why is this man here?
Allow me to present my old friend and trusted associate, Dr. Watson, who's assisting me in this curious case. Oh, for heaven's sake, shake hands, gentlemen.
Well, how do you do?
Dr. Watson, I hope I didn't do you any damage. The fact is, I've been living on my nerves lately, and when you accused me of harming Francis, I'm afraid I lost my head. This situation is completely beyond me.
And beyond me, too, or so I'm led to believe. No doubt Mr. Holmes will explain it to us.
What I can't fathom out, Mr. Holmes, is how in the world you came to know of my existence.
I've been in touch with Miss Daubeny, the old governess of Lady Francis.
Old Susan Daubeny, with the mob cap. I remember her very well.
Yes, and she remembers you. It was in the days before... before you found it necessary to get us to Africa.
I see you already know the story. Well, I'll be frank with you, Mr. Holmes. No man in this world ever loved a woman more than I loved Frances. All right. I was pretty wild as a youngster, I admit that. When she heard some of the things I'd done, well, she wouldn't have any more to do with me. And yet she still loved me. Loved me so much, she's remained single all her blessed days, just for my sake. As the years passed and I made some money and settled down, I thought... perhaps it was foolish of me, but I thought...
You thought you'd try to find her again?
I traced her to Lausanne. And she ran away from me. I picked up her trail as far as Baden, but she gave me the slip again. Then I managed to track down her maid. For pity's sake, Mr. Holmes, tell me what has become of Lady Francis.
That is what we intend to find out. How do you have a London address, Mr. Green?
The Langham Hotel will find me.
Then may I recommend that you return there and stay on hand until I call you? Rest assured, I will do all I can for the safety of Lady Francis. I can say no more at present. Well, here's my card, so you may keep in touch. And now, Watson, perhaps you'll send a wire to Mrs. Hudson informing her that two hungry travellers will be arriving tomorrow night at 8.
There's a telegram for you, Holmes.
Please open it for me, will you?
It's from the English Hof at Baden. Just three words. Jagged or torn. What does it mean?
Means everything. You may remember my seemingly irrelevant question regarding the clerical gentleman's left ear.
I couldn't believe it was a serious inquiry.
Well, luckily, I sent the same inquiry to the manager, Herr Brandt, and he produced the answer I expected. Dr. Schlesinger's left ear was jagged or torn.
What does that show?
It shows that we're dealing with an exceptionally astute and dangerous man. The Reverend Dr. Schlesinger, missionary from South America, is none other than Holy Peters, one of the most unscrupulous rascals Australia has ever turned out. Yes, his speciality is the beguiling of lonely ladies by playing upon their religious sensibilities.
But he has a wife.
His so-called wife, an Englishwoman, is a worthy helpmeet. The nature of his tactic suggested Holy Peters at once, and his physical peculiarity merely confirmed my suspicion. He was badly bitten during a saloon brawl in Adelaide in 89.
Then, if Lady Frances is in their hands...
It's possible she's already dead. They'll stop at nothing.
But if she is still alive...
Oh, she's undoubtedly being held in some sort of confinement, unable to get in touch with the outside world. My instinct tells me she's in London, but where? Oh, heaven alone knows. I've consulted our old friend Lestrade at Scotland Yard. Tomorrow we'll pay a call upon him to ask what he's discovered during our absence.
So far, Mr. Holmes, I'm sorry to say we've drawn a blank.
You disappoint me, Inspector.
Well, you didn't give us a lot to go on, did you? Amongst all the millions in London, a search for those three individuals is worse than needles in haystacks.
What about Lady Frances's jewellery? That could be traced, perhaps.
Well done, Watson. I took the precaution of making a list of the jewellery with the help of Miss Daubeny, and the Inspector's been circulating their description through the usual channels, but thank you for the suggestion.
Don't mention it. So that didn't produce any result either.
Oh, I wouldn't say that exactly. There was a report of one of the items turning up.
Why didn't you say so? What was it? Where?
A silver and diamond pendant of antique Spanish design was pawned somewhere in South London by a large, clean-shaven man of clerical appearance.
Well, did he leave a name and address?
Yes, but on investigation they turned out to be false.
Did the pawnbroker notice the man's left ear by any chance?
Well, I couldn't tell you offhand. I can look up the file if you're interested.
And you've set a plainclothes man to watch the shop in case he tries it again.
Oh, no, Mr. Holmes. We can't do that. There's not enough evidence to justify wasting a man's time in that way. Anyhow, I'll just fetch that file. I'll keep you a moment.
He should have kept the place under observation.
I presume it's against police regulations.
Confounded red tape. However, this will be a job for the Honourable Philip. It'll give him something to do. I'll send a letter to the pawnbroker, and they can fix him up in the back of the shop.
Ooh, I don't suppose Lestrade would approve of that.
Lestrade isn't going to find out. Ah, Inspector, you're very quick.
We don't hang about here in the yard, Mr. Holmes. Unfortunately, there's no mention of the gentleman's left ear in the description as given here.
Oh, no, it must have been Peters. I've no doubt on that score. By the way, as a matter of interest, where was this pawnbroker's shop?
Bevington's, in Westminster Road, Brixton. But like I said, I can't take any further action as to that. I'm sorry.
Ah, well, we must try to possess our souls in patience, mustn't we?
You don't think Philip Green might go off the deep end again and resort to fisticuffs?
Yeah, I put him on his honour. No violence, no indiscretion. He's promised not to take any action whatever without my knowledge and consent.
Let's hope he keeps his word. But time's running out, Holmes. And while we do nothing, some terrible disaster may befall Lady Frances.
I am aware of that. We must be prepared for the worst.
Listen, someone on the stairs.
We have him. We have him at last.
My dear sir, sit down. Try to calm yourself.
Thank you. I'm sorry, it's just... I couldn't wait to tell you...
Yeah, quite so. What has happened?
She came to the pawnbroker's about an hour ago.
Lady Frances?
No, no. The man's wife this time. But the pendant she brought in was an exact match of the last one. She's a tall woman with pale eyes, like a ferret.
That is the lady.
I watched her from the back room. And when she left the shop, I followed her. She walked up Westminster Road, and I kept behind her. Presently, she went into a shop. Mr. Holmes, it was an undertaker's.
Very well. Go on.
I followed her in. She was talking to the man behind the counter. "It's late," she said, or something like that. The undertaker was excusing himself. "It should have been there by now. Only it took longer being out of the ordinary," he said. Then they broke off and stared at me. So I said something stupid about losing my way and left.
You did very well. What happened next?
When the woman came out, I was hiding in the doorway. I'm afraid her suspicions had been roused, for she looked about her, but she didn't see me and walked off. I followed her again from a safe distance till I saw her go into her house.
Did you take a note of the address?
Number 36, Pulteney Square, Brixton. I stayed where I was and watched the house for some time. The windows were all dark, except for one room on the ground floor, but the blind was down, so I couldn't see in. I was just wondering what to do when a van drove up with two men in it. They carried something out of the van, up the steps into the house.
Did you see what it was?
I did. God help me, it was a coffin.
Good heavens.
I was on the point of rushing in after them, but I remembered my promise to you, and here I am.
You've done excellent work. But we can do nothing legal without a warrant. Watson,
yes.
Dash off a note to Lestrade explaining the latest developments and asking him to apply immediately for a search warrant.
But they could be murdering her at this very moment.
Please try to control yourself, my friend. Now, while you take the letter to Scotland Yard, Dr. Watson and I will go at once to Pulteney Square. There's not a moment to be lost. Let us try to reconstruct the situation.
Mm.
The villains coaxed the unhappy lady to London and made her their prisoner. They've already begun to sell her jewellery, which seems to them perfectly safe, as they've no reason to believe that anyone's concerned about her fate.
But they must know that if she is released, she will denounce them.
Precisely. Therefore, she must not be released. And as they cannot keep her under lock and key forever, they have but one solution.
Murder.
And yet, she is not to be disposed of in a hole in the back garden. They're preparing for a legal and official burial.
Which means putting her to death in a way that would deceive a medical man. Poison, perhaps.
Hmm?
But it seems strange that they should take the risk of calling in a doctor to sign a death certificate.
Now, one moment, Watson. Stop the cab, driver.
Why are we stopping here?
We've just passed Bevington's, the pawnbroker. This must be the undertaker's. Now, be so good as to go in and ask what time the Pulteney Square funeral takes place tomorrow.
Well, won't they think it rather odd?
No, not a bit of it. Your appearance inspires confidence. Now, be as quick as you can. Well, what did they say?
8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Drive on to Pulteney Square. So, there's no mystery. Everything's to be above board.
Yes, in some way. The legal procedures have been complied with.
Yes, well, there's nothing for it but a direct frontal attack upon the fortress. Are you armed?
Armed? No, I have my stick, that's all.
Yes, well, let's hope we'll be strong enough. Thrice is he armed who hath his quarrel just. Yes, and we certainly can't afford to wait for the police. We must take our chance, Watson. As we've done more than once in the past.
Do you think this is wise?
We have no choice. The warrant won't come through till tomorrow, and by then it'll be too late.
Yes? What do you want?
Good evening, madam. I'm sorry to disturb you at this hour, but it's a matter of some urgency. After you, Doctor.
Doctor? The doctor's already been. He signed the death certificate.
Did he? Indeed. Nevertheless, we wish to speak to Mr. Schlesinger, sir.
You've got the wrong house. Take your foot out of the door. There's nobody by that name here.
Well, in that case, we'll see the man who lives here. Unless Mr. Peters is afraid to face us. Well, madam?
My husband is not afraid to face any man in the world. You'd better come in.
What's going on here, Annie?
These men forced their way in. That one calls himself a doctor.
There's surely some mistake, gentlemen. I fancy you've been misdirected. Perhaps if you were to try further down the
street... Let's not waste any more time. You are Henry Peters of Adelaide, also known as the Reverend Dr. Schlesinger, recently arrived from Baden. I'm as sure of that as that my name is Sherlock Holmes.
Your name doesn't frighten me, Mr. Holmes. When a man's conscience is easy, you can't rattle him. What's your business in this house?
I want to know what you've done with a Lady Frances Carfax, whom you brought away with you from Baden.
I'll be very glad if you can tell me where that lady may be. I've a bill against her for nearly £100.
Yes, and nothing to show for it but a couple of trumpery pendants that the dealer wouldn't hardly look at.
She attached herself to Mrs. Peters and me at Baden.
Where you were passing yourself off under an assumed name.
I don't deny it, but that's no crime as far as I'm aware. The woman stuck herself onto us till we came to London. I paid her hotel bill and her travel tickets, and once we got here, she gave us the slip. And, as my wife says, she left us some old-fashioned jewellery to pay her bills. Now, if you find her, Mr. Holmes, I'll be in your debt.
Oh, I mean to find her. In fact, I'm going through this house until I do find her.
Really? And do you have a warrant?
I have a loaded revolver in my pocket. That will have to serve until something better comes along.
Is that so? It strikes me you're nothing but a common or garden burglar.
Well, I might fit that description, certainly. And my companion is also a dangerous ruffian. Together we propose to go through your house.
Annie, fetch a policeman.
Yes, Henry. Don't you dare touch me.
I wouldn't dream of it.
If you try to stop us, Peters, you will certainly get hurt. Now then, where is the coffin which was brought into this house?
What do you want with the coffin? You can't see it. It's in use.
In other words, there's a body in it, and we wish to see that body.
Never with my consent.
Well, then without it. Come, Watson, the front parlour.
On the table. We need a light.
Yeah, this candle. That's better. Now, lift the lid, Watson.
But this can't be... This aged, withered face.
Thank God, it's a different woman.
So you admit you've blundered, Mr. Holmes. Yes, you've blundered badly this time.
Who is this woman?
I don't know why I should tell you, but since you're so interested, she was Rose Spender, an old nurse of my wife's family. We found her at the Brixton workhouse and brought her here to end her life in peace and some comfort. She only lasted 3 days. Dr. Howson, of 13 Fairbank Villas, certified that her death was due to natural causes, senile decay. Would you agree with that opinion, Doctor?
Upon superficial examination, yes. It seems quite probable.
The funeral's to be carried out by Stimpson and Company of Westminster Road, who will bury her at 8 o'clock in the morning. Anything wrong with that, Mr. Holmes?
I can't say.
I'm sure you can't. And I'd give a good deal to have a photograph of your staring silly faces when you pulled aside that lid expecting to see Lady Frances and found a poor old woman of 90 instead.
Yes, nevertheless, I must insist on going through this house.
Oh, yes. Well, we'll see about that.
Henry, this gentleman was waiting at the street corner. He's a policeman.
Plain clothes, eh? Good. Do your duty, officer. These men have forced their way into my house, and we can't get rid of them. This is Mr. Sherlock Holmes, and this
I already know Mr. Holmes and Dr. Watson. I might find you. But you must know you've no business here without a warrant.
Yes, I understand that.
What are you waiting for? Arrest them.
There'll be no necessity for that, sir. We know where to find Mr. Holmes if he's wanted. Come along, gentlemen.
Come, Holmes. We have to go.
Yeah, sorry about that, but the law is the law.
Oh, certainly, Inspector. You had to do your duty.
I was on my way home when that chap arrived with your request for a search warrant. He told me where you'd gone, so I thought it might be best to take a hand in it myself before any awkwardness took place.
But we still feel certain the missing lady is in that house somewhere.
Yes, Doctor, but the warrant won't be signed till the morning. In the meantime, I'll keep a man posted out here to make sure they don't try and smuggle her out. So you might as well take yourselves off to Baker Street and get a good night's sleep.
Well, Holmes, did you manage to get any sleep?
Very little. To be so near and still fail. It's unbearable. You managed to speak to that doctor, what was his name?
Dr. Howson, yes. Yeah. He wasn't best pleased at being woken at such an unearthly hour, but he confirms the story Peters told us. The old woman was an inmate of Brixton Workhouse.
Whether she'd been Mrs. Peters' old nurse, I very much doubt. As to the cause of death...
Dr. Howson was with her when she breathed her last, and he signed the certificate. He assured me that everything was perfectly normal. There was no question of any foul play. Nothing in the house struck him as suspicious in any way.
Perhaps not, but there was something suspicious all the same. I know it. If only I... Good Lord! How could I have been so dim-witted? What time's the funeral?
8 o'clock.
What time's it now?
7:20.
Now, quick, man, hats and coats. If we're too late, I shall never forgive myself. This is a race against time.
You can't come in here.
Into the parlour, Watson.
Don't you dare. The undertaker's busy in
Put
there.
Put down that coffin,
what
gentlemen.
What the...
Do you have a warrant for this intrusion?
The warrant's on its way, and the coffin remains in this house until it arrives. Are you the undertaker?
I am, but I must protest.
Never mind that. I see you have a screwdriver. There's a sovereign for you if that lid comes off within 1 minute. Oh, let's help him, Watson.
Come away, my dear. This is no place for us.
This is an outrage,
sir. Don't argue, man. Do as I say.
What's happening here?
Mr. Holmes.
Come in, Lestrade, just in time.
There. That's the last one. Lift your side. It's giving.
Oh! Chloroform. Of course it would be.
And the face covered with cotton wool.
Yes. Let me do that. There.
Is that her? Is that
Lady Frances Carfax. Yes. Is she alive, Watson?
It depends how long she's been shut in there without oxygen. There may still be a spark of life within her. Stand aside, all of you.
Pray God we're not too late.
For some time, I was afraid we were too late. When her eyelids fluttered at last, it was something like a miracle.
Yeah.
And when Mr. Philip Green arrived...
No, I felt sure he wouldn't be far away. I fancy he has a better right to take care of her than anyone else.
Oh, yes, indeed. So the funeral was able to proceed. And the poor old woman who lay in the bottom of that coffin was allowed to go to her final rest alone.
Yeah. Well, if you decide to add this strange case to your annals, let it be an awful warning. An example of the temporary eclipse to which even the best balanced mind may occasionally succumb.
What was it that put you on the right track, Holmes?
Well, last night I lay awake, haunted by the thought that somewhere a clue had come to my notice and had been too easily dismissed. Yes, in the grey light of dawn, a few words came back to me, the words of the undertaker, as reported by Mr. Green. It took longer being out of the ordinary. Why was the coffin out of the ordinary? Then I remembered the deep sides and that little, shrunken figure at the bottom. Why so large a casket for so small a body? To leave room for a second corpse, both to be buried under the one certificate. Yes, damnably ingenious device.
During the confusion, I gather the precious pair managed to make their escape. No doubt they will soon be picked up.
Let us hope so, indeed. Though, of course, if they should escape the clutches of the law, it might prove to be interesting.
Interesting?
Yes, certainly. If our paths should cross a second time, the outcome might be very different. Yes. I await news of their future career with pleasurable anticipation.
In The Disappearance of Lady Frances Carfax, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Medicine and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams, with Jack Claff as the Honourable Philip Green. Inspector Lestrade was played by Stephen Thorne, Holy Peters by Peter Wickham, Mrs. Peters by Gilly Mears, Monsieur Moser by John Baddeley, Herr Brandt by Colin Pinney, Marie Devine by Rachel Atkins, and The Undertaker by William Maxwell. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Disappearance of Lady Frances Carfax was dramatized for radio by Peter Ling and directed by Enid Williams.
This way. You follow me.
Where are you taking me?
You want special pipe? I have for you. Make feel good.
Good. Special?
Only for special client. But as much money.
I have money.
Show me.
I have money. See? Money.
Here. Come here. Closer. Show me money.
Yeah, show money. Much money.
Closer.
Much money.
Much money.
The Man with the Twisted Lip by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Peter Mackey. With Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. and featuring Robin Herford as Hugh Boone. The Man with the Twisted Lip.
Despite my long association with Sherlock Holmes, our professional paths rarely crossed. Naturally, there were occasions when, in pursuance of some of the many criminal investigations we undertook together, my experience as a medical man was of especial value. But to be consulted as a doctor and then find that my independent course of action brought me into direct contact with a case upon which Holmes was engaged, that was a rare event indeed. The particular adventure I have in mind first involved me at the end of a long and trying day at my practice. Mary, as I recall, was engaged with her needlework, whilst I must confess, was already glancing at the clock and contemplating the joys of a good night's sleep.
A patient. You'll have to go out.
Blast!
John!
Sorry, my dear.
We heard the front door open, a few hurried words, and then quick steps upon the linoleum. Our own door flew open, and a lady, clad in some dark-coloured stuff, with a black veil, entered the room.
You will excuse my calling so late.
Why, it's Kate Whitney.
Oh, I'm in such trouble.
Kate!
I do so want a little help.
Oh, my dear, what is the matter?
I didn't know what to do, so I came straight to you.
Of course you did. It was very sweet of you. Now you must have some wine and water and sit here comfortably and tell us all about it. Or should you rather that I sent John off to bed?
Oh, no, no. I want the doctor's advice and help, too. It's about Isa. He's not been home for 2 days. I'm so frightened for him.
Mrs. Whitney, has your husband returned to his old habit? Has he taken to opium again?
Yes.
I feared he would.
Oh, but he tried, Doctor. And I know he tried to keep it from me, too. Well, up until now, his orgies have always been confined to one day, and he would come back twitching and shattered in the evening. But now, he's been away for 48 hours. What am I to do? Please, you must help me. Please.
Which den does he make use of?
It's near the docks. The Bar of Gold in Upper Swandam Lane. Oh, but how can I make my way into such a place?
And perhaps I could escort you. No, on second thoughts, I could manage it better if I were alone. Yes, as your husband's medical advisor, that is my responsibility. I believe I may still be able to influence him. If indeed he is at the address you have given me, you have my word. I will send him home in a cab within 2 hours.
Please be careful, John.
Of course, my dear. I shall be as quick as I can.
And so, in 10 minutes, I had left my armchair and cheery sitting room behind me and was speeding eastward in a hansom on a strange errand, as it seemed to me at the time, though the future only could show how strange it was to be. Upper Swandam Lane is a vile alley lurking behind the high wharves which line the north side of the river to the east of London Bridge. Between a slop shop and a gin shop, approached by a steep flight of steps leading down to a black gap like the mouth of a cave, I found the den of which I was in search. Ordering my cab to wait, I passed down the steps, worn hollow in the centre by the ceaseless tread of drunken feet. By the light of a flickering oil lamp above the door, I found the latch and made my way into a long, low room, thick and heavy with brown opium smoke, and terraced with wooden berths like the forecastle of an emigrant ship. At the farther end, there was a small brazier of burning charcoal, besides which, on a three-legged stool, there sat a tall, thin old man with his jaw resting upon his two fists and his elbows upon his knees, staring into the fire. Through the gloom, I could dimly catch a glimpse of bodies lying in fantastic poses, bowed shoulders, bent knees, heads thrown back and chins pointing upwards, with here and there a dark, lackluster eye turned upon the newcomer. Out of the black shadows there glimmered little red circles of light, now bright, now faint, as the burning poison waxed or waned in the bowls of the metal pipes.
Give me coat. I bring you pipe.
Thank you. I have not come to stay.
Please?
There is a friend of mine here, Mr. Isa Whitney. I wish to speak to him.
My God, it's Watson.
Leave us, please.
Very well.
It's all right, old boy. I'm here to help you.
I say, Watson, what o'clock is it?
Nearly 11.
Of what day?
Isa Whitney, brother of the late Elias Whitney, D.D., principal of the Theological College of St. George's, much addicted to opium. The habit grew upon him, as I understand, from some foolish freak when he was at college. For having read De Quincey's description of his own dreams and sensations, he had drenched his tobacco with laudanum in an attempt to produce the same effects. He found, as so many more have done, that the practice is easier to attain than to get rid of. And for many years he continued to be a slave to the drug, an object of mingled horror and pity to his friends and relatives. Today is Friday, June the 19th.
Friday? Good heavens. I thought it was Wednesday. It is Wednesday. What do you want to frighten a chap for?
I tell you that it is Friday, man. Your wife has been waiting these 2 days for you. You should be ashamed of yourself.
So I am. Find out what I owe, Watson. I'm all off colour. I can do nothing for myself.
I walk down the narrow passage between the double row of sleepers, holding my breath to keep out the vile, stupefying fumes of the drug, and looking about for the manager. As I passed the tall man who sat by the brazier, I felt a sudden pluck at my coat tail.
Walk past and then look back at me.
The words could only have come from the old man at my side, and yet as I glanced down, he sat as absorbed as ever, very thin, very wrinkled, bent with age, an opium pipe dangling down from between his knees as though it had dropped in sheer lassitude from his fingers. I took 2 steps forward and looked back.
Good God!
The old man had now turned his back so that none could see him but I. His form had filled out. His wrinkles were gone. The dull eyes had regained their fire. And there, sitting by the brazier and grinning at my surprise, was none other than Sherlock Holmes.
Holmes? What on earth are you doing in this den?
As low as you can. I have excellent ears. If you would have the great kindness to get rid of that sottish friend of yours, I should be exceedingly glad to have a little talk with you.
I have a cab outside.
And pray send him home in it. He's too limp to get into any mischief. And also send a note by the cabman to your wife to say that you've thrown in your lot with me. If you'll wait outside, I shall be with you in 5 minutes.
It was difficult to refuse any of Sherlock Holmes' requests, for they were always so exceedingly definite and put forward with such a quiet air of mastery. In a few minutes, I had written my note, paid Whitney's bill, led him out to the cab and seen him driven through the darkness. In a very short time, a decrepit figure had emerged from the opium den, and for 2 streets, Holmes shuffled along with a bent back and an uncertain foot. You know, Holmes, it's high time that you told me exactly what...
Shh! When we are safely around this next corner.
Really, Holmes? I failed to find anything humorous in the situation.
I suppose, Watson, that you imagine that I've added opium smoking to cocaine injections and all the other weaknesses on which you favoured me with your medical views.
I was certainly surprised to find you in a place like that.
But not more so than I to find you.
I came to find a friend.
And I to find an enemy.
An enemy?
Yes, one of my natural enemies, or shall I say, my natural prey. Watson, I'm in the midst of a very remarkable inquiry, and I've hoped to find a clue in the incoherent ramblings of these sots, as I've done before now. Had I been recognized in that den, my life would not have been worth an hour's purchase. I've used the place before now for my own purposes, and the rascally Lascar who runs it has sworn vengeance on me.
You mean the fellow I spoke with?
The same. The trapdoor at the back of that building, near the corner of Paul's Wharf, which could tell some strange tales of what's passed through it upon moonless nights.
You mean bodies?
Oh, yes, bodies, Watson. We should be rich men if we had £1,000 for every poor devil who's been done to death in that den. It's the vilest murder trap on the whole riverside, and I fear Neville St. Clair has entered it never to leave it more.
Who is this St. Clair fellow?
Yeah, one moment. Our trap should be here. Ah, there he is. Now, Watson,
You'll come with me, won't you?
If I can be of any use.
Oh, a trusty comrade is always of use, and a chronicler even more so.
Where shall we be sleeping tonight?
In my room at the Cedars. It's a double-bedded one.
The Cedars?
At Mr. Sinclair's home. I'm staying there while I conduct the inquiry.
Where is it then?
Near Lee, in Kent. We have a 7-mile drive before us.
Yeah, but I'm all in the dark.
Of course you are. Well, you'll know about it presently. All right, John, we'll be driving ourselves. Jump up, Watson. Up there.
And we dashed away through the endless succession of somber and deserted streets, which widened gradually until we were flying across a broad balustraded bridge with the murky river flowing sluggishly beneath us. A dull rack was drifting slowly across the sky, and a star or two twinkled dimly here and there through the rifts of the clouds. Holmes drove in silence, with his head sunk upon his breast, and the air of a man who was lost in thought, while I sat beside him, curious to learn what this new quest might be, which seemed to tax his powers so sorely, and yet afraid to break in upon the current of his thoughts. We had driven several miles and were beginning to get to the fringe of the belt of suburban villas when he shook himself, shrugged his shoulders, and lit up his pipe with the air of a man who has satisfied himself that he is acting for the best.
You have a grand gift of silence, Watson. It makes you quite invaluable as a companion.
Good of you to say so.
That's a great thing for me to have someone to talk to, for my own thoughts are not over pleasant. I was wondering what I should say to this dear little woman tonight when she meets me at the door.
You forget that I still know nothing about it.
And I shall just have time to tell you the facts of the case before we get to Lee. It seems absurdly simple, and yet somehow I can get nothing to go on. There's plenty of thread, no doubt, but I can't get the end of it into my hand. Now, I'll state the case clearly and concisely to you, Watson, and maybe you can see a spark, but all is dark to me.
Proceed, then.
But some years ago, to be definite, in May 1884, there came to Lee a gentleman, Neville Sinclair by name, who appeared to have plenty of money. By degrees, he made friends in the neighbourhood, and in 1887 he married the daughter of a local brewer, by whom he now has 2 children. He had no occupation, but was interested in several companies, and went to town, as a rule, in the morning, returning by the 5:14 from Cannon Street every night. And Mr. Sinclair is now 37 years of age, is a man of temperate habits, a good husband, a very affectionate father, and a man who is popular with all who know him. Am I going too fast, Watson?
No, not at all. Pray continue.
Last Monday, Mr. Neville Sinclair went to town rather earlier than usual, saying he would bring his little boy home a box of bricks. Now, by the merest chance, his wife received a telegram upon this same Monday to the effect that a small parcel of considerable value, which she'd been expecting, was waiting for her in the offices of the Aberdeen Shipping Company. Now, if you're well up in your London, you will know that the office of the company is in Fresno Street, which branches out of Upper Swandam Lane, where you found me tonight. So, Mrs. Sinclair had her lunch, started for the city, got her packet, and found herself at exactly 4:35 walking through Swandam Lane on her way back to the station.
Oh, not a pleasant neighbourhood for a lady.
No, indeed. Now, if you remember, Monday was an exceedingly hot day, and Mrs. Sinclair walked slowly, glancing about in the hope of seeing a cab. Then she heard a cry. She was struck cold to see her husband looking down at her, and, as it seemed to her, beckoning to her from a second-floor window. The window was open, and she distinctly saw his face, which she describes as being terribly agitated. He waved his hands frantically to her, and then vanished from the window so suddenly that it seemed to her that he'd been plucked back by some irresistible force from behind.
Extraordinary.
One singular point which struck her quick feminine eye was that although he wore some dark coat, such as he'd started a town in, he had on neither collar nor necktie. Convinced there was something amiss with him, she hurried down the steps, for the house was none other than the opium den in which you found me tonight, and running through the front room, she attempted to ascend the stairs which led to the second floor. At the foot of the stairs, however, she met that Lascar scoundrel who thrust her back and pushed her out into the street. Filled with the most maddening doubts and fears, she rushed down the lane and, by rare good fortune, met in Fresno Street a number of constables with an inspector all on their way to the beat. The inspector and 2 men accompanied her back, and in spite of the continued resistance of the proprietor, made their way to the room in which Mr. Sinclair had last been seen.
And?
Now, exactly what happened then, I would like you to hear from Mrs. Sinclair herself. We are almost at the house. Suffice it to say, at this stage, Neville Sinclair was nowhere to be seen. In fact, in the whole of that floor, there was no one to be found save a sinister cripple. His name is Hugh Boone, and his hideous face is one which is familiar to every man who goes much into the city. A professional beggar, and such a piteous spectacle that a small rain of charity descends into the greasy leather cap which lies upon the pavement beside him. His appearance, you see, is so remarkable that no one can pass without observing him. A shock of orange hair, a pale face disfigured by a horrible scar, which, by its contraction, has turned up the outer edge of his upper lip, a bulldog chin and a pair of very penetrating dark eyes, which present a singular contrast to the colour of his hair, all mark him out from amid the common crowd of mendicants. So, too, does his wit, for he's ever ready with a reply to any piece of chaff which may be thrown at him by the passers-by. This is the man whom we now learn to have been the lodger at the opium den and to have been the last man to see the gentleman of whom we are in quest. Ah, here we are, the Cedars. Yes, and we're expected. There's still a light on.
So what did this cripple have to say for himself?
Both he and the Lascar stoutly swore that no one else had been in the front room during the afternoon.
Obviously lying.
Quite possibly. Especially as traces of blood were to be seen on the windowsill and several scattered drops were visible upon the wooden floor of the bedroom. For the moment, Watson, just let me give you this thought. Well, there is only one entrance to that house in Swandam Lane, and all the back windows look directly onto the river, which was at its height at the time. When the mud was revealed once more, however, the police inspector found not Mr. Neville St. Clair, but a coat identified as belonging to him. And do you know why that coat had not been dragged away by the fierce currents of an ebbing tide, Watson?
Weighted in some way?
Every pocket had been stuffed with coppers. 421 pennies and 270 halfpennies. They must assume that the body, being less encumbered, was sucked away into the river. Ah, the groom will take care of our horse. Shall we go in? Mrs. St. Clair, may I present my colleague, Dr. Watson?
I'm delighted to see you.
Madam?
You will, I'm sure, forgive anything that may be wanting in our arrangements when you consider the blow which has come so suddenly upon us.
My dear madam, I am an old campaigner. And if I were not, I can very well see that no apology is needed.
Please, gentlemen, do take a seat.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, I should very much like to ask you one or two plain questions to which I beg that you will give a plain answer.
Certainly, madam.
Do not trouble about my feelings. I am not hysterical, nor given to fainting. I simply wish to hear your real, real opinion.
Upon what point?
In your heart of hearts, do you think Neville is alive? Frankly, now.
Frankly, I do not.
You think that he is dead?
I do.
Murdered?
I don't say that. Perhaps.
And on what day did he meet his death?
On Monday.
Then perhaps, Mr. Holmes, you will be good enough to explain how it is that I have received a letter from him today.
What?
Yes, today.
Well, may I see it?
Certainly.
Oh, thank you. A Gravesend postmark, this morning's date, a coarse hand. Surely this is not your husband's writing, madam.
No, but the note inside certainly is.
I perceive also that whoever addressed the envelope had to go and inquire as to the address.
How can you tell that, Holmes?
The name, you see, is in perfectly black ink, which has dried itself. The rest is of a greyish colour, which shows that blotting paper has been used. Oh. If it had been written straight off and then blotted, none would be of a deep black shade. Now, this man has written the name, and there has been a pause before he wrote the address, which can only mean that he was not familiar with it. It is, of course, a trifle, but there is nothing so important as trifles. Now, let us now see the letter. Ah, yes, there's been an enclosure here.
Yes, there was a ring, his signet ring.
Yes, I see. Dearest, do not be frightened. All will come well. There is a huge error which it may take some little time to rectify. Wait in patience, Neville. Yes. Written in pencil upon the flyleaf of a book, octavo size, no watermark. Posted today in Gravesend by a man with a dirty thumb, and the flap has been gummed, if I'm not very much in error, by a man who'd been chewing tobacco. And you've no doubt it's your husband's hand, madam.
None. Neville wrote those words.
Well, Mrs. Sinclair, the clouds lighten, though I should not venture to say that the danger is over.
But he must be alive, Mr. Holmes. Well,
unless this letter is a clever forgery to put us all on the wrong scent. The ring, after all, proves nothing. It may have been taken from him.
No, no, it is his very own writing.
Ah, very well. It may, however, have been written on Monday and only posted today.
That is possible.
If so, much may have happened between.
Oh, you must not discourage me, Mr. Holmes. I know that all is well with him. There is so keen a sympathy between us that I should know if evil came upon him. On the very day that I saw him last, he cut himself in the bedroom, and yet I, in the dining room, rushed upstairs instantly with the utmost certainty that something had happened. Do you think that I would respond to such a trifle and yet be ignorant of his death?
I have seen too much not to know that the impression of a woman may be more valuable than the conclusion of an analytical reasoner. But if your husband is alive and able to write letters, why should he remain away from you?
I cannot imagine. It is unthinkable.
And on Monday he made no remarks before leaving you?
No.
And you were surprised to see him that afternoon at the window?
Very much so.
Had he ever spoken of Swandam Lane?
Never.
Had he ever showed signs of taking opium?
Never.
Yes, very well. Now, you say you thought he was pulled back from the window.
He disappeared so suddenly.
Yes, we might have leapt back. Could you see anyone else in the room?
Not from the street.
Mrs. Sinclair, please think carefully and then tell us precisely what happened from the moment you entered the second floor room with the inspector and his men.
Very well. As you will recall, several minutes had elapsed before I was able to secure the assistance of the police in Fresno Street and return with them to the house in Swandam Lane.
Stay by the door, Auden.
Very good, sir.
Tompkins, search the other room.
Sir.
Now, who are you?
I am owner of house.
Then I want to talk to you. But you, I do know. What are you doing in here, Boone?
I live here.
Threadneedle Street, that's your pitch, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, how long have you been back here, then?
20 minutes, thereabouts.
This lady says she saw another man in here about 5 minutes ago, in the window there.
Been no one here but me and the landlord.
What do you say to that?
It is truth.
I see. Mrs. Sinclair, you sure it was this window?
Perfectly sure.
And sorry to have to ask you this, madam. It was your husband you saw.
Of course, I should know.
This is the second floor, Mrs. Sinclair. Can you be sure of that?
I'm his wife, Inspector.
Quite. Well, Boone, you've heard what the lady said.
Olivia, I should know. There's been no other party here. Just me and him.
He's lying. Neville was here. I know it.
All right, Mrs. Sinclair. I'll take a look around. What's in this cupboard, Boone?
A few bits and pieces. Not much.
Let's take a look, shall we? A few bits and pieces, eh? Well, I wouldn't have thought children's toys was in your line of business.
What do you mean?
I suppose you're going to tell me you've never seen these building bricks before.
Neville said he...
Yes, Mrs. Sinclair?
My husband said he would buy a present for our little boy today. He has been here.
Oh, I've never seen them before, I tell you.
In here, Inspector.
Bring him along, Warden.
Right, sir.
Yeah, I've done nothing, I tell
that's
you.
Enough
you
ain't got no...
What is it, Tompkins?
I found these behind the curtain there, sir.
Boots, socks, hat, watch. Mrs. Sinclair?
Yes, they are my husband's.
Are you all right, madam?
I...
Yeah, you better sit down.
I should be all right, Inspector.
All right, Boone. What do you know about this?
Nothing. Oh, I swear, I've never seen those clothes before.
Did you open this window, Tompkins?
No, sir.
Let's have a look then. River's high. Come here, Boone. I said here! What's this, then?
Where?
On the sill there. Blood.
It's mine! See? Oh, my hand! I cut myself earlier!
Oh, so you have. But who's to say that's your blood on the window? Who's to say it's not from Mr. Neville Sinclair?
No!
After you cut his throat and pushed his body into the river?
No!
You, Boone, I arrest you for the murder of Neville Sinclair.
But I'm innocent, I tell you. I've never seen this thing.
Say him down the station.
No, it's a mistake. He was never here.
That's enough from you.
Yeah, and I want to see you again later.
I'm not going away, sir.
Just make sure you don't.
I'm innocent, I tell you. Innocent.
At that moment, then, you believed your husband dead.
Yes. You know what agony and grief these last few days have held for me, Mr. Holmes. Yeah. But today, this letter, the relief of knowing he is alive.
But not where he might be.
Neville has good reason for keeping that from me, Mr. Holmes. For the moment, it is enough to know he will return to his family. He has asked me to be patient, and I will. And now, if you will excuse me, Mr. Holmes, it has been a long day.
Yes, of course. My apologies for keeping you up so late.
Your supper has been laid out in the dining room.
Oh, that'll be most welcome. And then we...